Yeah. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Hope you had a good Labor Day. I'm Tom McCaffrey here with Eric B, LA2B. Before we start, buy my album. It's out now on Spotify and iTunes and all that stuff. The Killing. Rate and review this podcast, subscribe, join our Patreon. How's it going, man? What's going on? Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah, good. How about you?
Yeah, it was good. I was in the Hamptons. All right. Yeah. So that was fun. And then I did a bunch of stuff. And
what'd you do?
I went to the beach. That was about it. That's why I was laughing, because I thought I did, but I don't think I did do that much. And it went fast.
Do they have beaches in Slovenia?
Or I think they do. So apparently all our listeners in Slovenia, thank you for listening. Shout out. Thanks for making us number 3 in Slovenia, right under Tiger Belly and right before Netflix is a joke. So,
wow.
Yeah.
We're going to get over there soon.
We're beating Netflix in Slovenia. Not everyone can say that.
No.
Only 3 podcasts can say that. So thank you to our listener who maybe downloaded 50 episodes.
It might be a million. Maybe it's a million people.
Probably. I don't even know if there are a million people there.
We still love
Slovenia. Isn't that? Yeah, I'd like to go there. Isn't that like where they did that Hostel movie where they go and they murder them?
Maybe. I bet they have some cool things over there. We'll do some research and we'll find out a little bit more about it. But we do love that country.
We do, yeah. Just don't murder us if we go there. Maybe it was an accident. Anyway, but thanks. So a few things happened today that I saw in the entertainment news. First one that I saw was Hyde, Danny Masterson from, you know, That 70s Show. Apparently he got sentenced to 30 years in jail.
Mm-hmm.
That should be cool for him.
When he gets out, it'll be that 70s Show again, but he'll be in his 70s.
Yeah, that's true.
And the 70 people who are going to rape him repeatedly in prison, you know.
Yeah, you should pitch that. We should pitch that right now. Hey, let's do it. That 70s Show reboot, like, oh, with Danny Masterson, just about the guys raping him and him being in his 70s.
30 years, though, is a lot. Like, that's even, I mean, you're a lawyer, you know that. I mean, people get that for murder. That's what someone texted me. They're like, Danny Masterson should have killed all those women and he probably would have gotten less time.
Yeah. I think he got more than like a lot of killers do. Yeah. Famous killers.
They must have had something on him though. You know, like, I mean,
wonder why. Why do you think was that judge just maybe, you know, I feel like everyone in that town, you know, is like, in the industry somewhat or in some capacity or was at some point. So maybe that judge at one point was an actor or director who got snubbed by that. Show. I'm just kidding. But I mean,
yeah, actually Topher Grace was the judge.
So Wilmer Valderrama was the bailiff. I did think that was, pretty harsh, but I don't know. I guess he raped 3 women and were in Scientology. So,
yeah. So I think that's what it was.
Not to interrupt, but I understand Scientology, they're weird, but they keep going to Scientology for the rape thing. And it's like, is there a thing in Scientology where you're just allowed to rape people? Is that kind of,
I think something like that, where there's a lot of sex and, you know, it's a cult, let's face it. And we always talk about all the cults. What the main thing is, just fucking as many people as you can, whatever, however it starts. It ends with you having to fuck or blow people.
Yeah, I got to start a cult or join a cult. that's not good, but it sounds like. But yeah, you're right. It always just goes to them. They have sex with everyone. That's always the next step. We always talk about, but it's like it starts with like self-empowerment. That's kind of how they hook you in. Hey, do you want to like better your life and like find out like what you're really capable of. Yeah, that sounds good. And then a weekend, they're like, all right, blow this guy, clean the toilet, give us all your money, go live in a shack. Like, wait, I thought I was going to help my self-esteem. Yeah, we'll do that. We'll get started on that.
Remember the Nexium thing where they would have sex with him and then they would get branded? I'm like, I mean, he had a lot of nerve. I mean, because that branding is like basically evidence.
Also, so. why do you need to brand though? Why don't you just have sex? They were having sex with you and they were letting you get away with it. Just no, it's not enough. I have to have my name on their ass. It's not humiliating enough. Like, they've already given you all their money and they have sex with you and they blow you every day.
Yeah.
It's really funny too, because then they're like, yeah, he was, you know. They later on when they're out, they always talk about how they got roped in. They're always like, oh, they're, you know, if you had seen him, he was just such a great speaker and he's so charismatic. You know, he just had such a way about him of like luring you in. And then they show the guys and they're like these fat, ugly dudes. And they're always like, you know, they show Charles Manson just dancing around in his underpants with a swastika on his face. I'm like, you know, I don't really get the appeal here. I don't see the charm.
Right. You just didn't know. You did not know him like I did, you know.
He could really talk. He could talk to you all night. But every time I see him, he's just crazy.
Yeah, that's really funny. But
maybe
he's
just dumb. That's I was going to that. Like, how come it's never you're dumb? It's always them. It's like, maybe you're just an idiot.
Yeah. Yeah, you never see that when even those things. Yeah, they, I mean, every once in a while you'll see someone like, yeah, I got roped in. But most of them are like, it was just, you had to be there. You didn't understand.
They won't, no one will own up to it. They always go with, you know, anyone susceptible to it. Everyone who says they wouldn't be lured in, anyone could get lured in.
Right.
And no one's ever just like, yeah, I'm dumb. Yeah, I'm just not smart. I mean, I knew it when I was growing up.
Right. Wouldn't you do it like right after they ask you to give you all their money? I mean, that would be it for me. That usually probably happens before the blowing. So, I mean. Yeah. I know with Scientology, if you know, you watch those documentaries, the way they kind of also rope you in is they have that like black file on you. You remember that, where they find ways to blackmail you, then they find secrets. So that's their first move, where they'll get shit on you and they're like, if you don't blow us, we're gonna release this.
Yeah.
And then you blow them, and then they take a picture of that and they go, nah, this is part of that file of you blowing us,
and if you don't blow me again, Then I'm going to release the last blow picture. And then soon you have 800 blow pictures. Like, well, I guess I'm in this for the long haul. I don't know. It's just, I feel like I would risk it at that point. If they were like, we have some really embarrassing stuff on you, Tom, you know, like, so you better give us all your money and blow everyone. I'd be like, you know what? Let's go. I'm going to gamble with this. What do you have? Well, we have that picture from the prom.
Yeah.
Very flattering. I guarantee you they don't really have that much.
No, they'd be like, we saw you take 5 cents out of the give a penny, take a penny thing at the, remember those things?
Yeah. Like, you know, everyone's like, oh, they're blackmailing John Travolta. Like, you know, it's like, what could they have on John Travolta? What tape could they have? Would they just have the movie Staying Alive? Is that what they're sitting on? It's like, what more could you do to embarrass yourself? You already made fucking.
Well, that's why I'm not a big proponent.
Look Who's Talking 3. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm not a big proponent of dick pics. Even I don't think I really ever did one, you know, on purpose. I don't know how I would do it accidentally, but I just feel like I never want any of the things out there because, you know, you also that, like, what do they call that? Revenge porn, where, you know, you're sending videos of your dick to some girl and then you break up with her and then she's posting it on the internet.
I feel like in a way all porn is revenge porn. I feel like if you're doing porn, you're just kind of trying to get back at someone in your life, usually your dad. But yeah, I've never done that. I've never wanted to. I don't know who needs to see that.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. I talk to these women and they're like, yeah, I match with a dude and they would just send me a dick pic like while we were going back and forth on the app. And it's just like, why?
Right.
Is that a deal closer? I mean, like, how great is your dick?
And not only that, but not only that, it's like, if you're taking a picture of your own dick, I assume it's going to be kind of close because you can only, I guess if you have like a tripod and a timer, all that crap, but I'm assuming if you just do it yourself, you're going to be pretty close up. Yeah, and make your penis look bigger, but it also, no one wants to see a penis up close. It's not, that's something you need a little distance with. I don't care. I mean, that's what I think. I think there's not one good looking penis up close.
Yeah. Yeah. Anytime I've, you know, even when you're using it in, you know, the sexual situation, it's like, they're not like taking like, you know, like long glances at, you know, they're not glancing at it like, lovingly. They're, it's just kind of more like a utility thing. Like they're kind of like, okay, I'm going to, you know, like that's kind of how genitals are. You're not really supposed to like, you know, get them up close and study them. And, you know, it's, they're not like beautiful things.
Right. Right.
They're not like a landscape painting. They're just kind of like, okay, well, I'm, you know, I'm biologically wired to do this now. And it's more the feeling of it. Right. It's, I guess.
I would imagine.
That I've heard. But anyway, so yeah, Danny Masterson. So, you know, it's sort of hilarious, right? I mean, like that's a pretty big fall from grace. Not that he was like ever such a huge A-lister, but I mean, he had a pretty great life, that guy.
Oh, yeah. He was
what
back.
A bummer. How bummed out do you think he must be?
I mean, he was back too. I mean, because Ashton Kutcher put him on his show. They were tight. And he's probably thinking I think he was probably out of Scientology. So he's probably like, I'm paying for something I did a really long time ago, even though I was a maniac. You know, you still deserve to be punished, but maybe he, in his mind, he's like, I'm not that person anymore, but you know, it's too late. You know?
Why do they, I don't understand why these guys always rape everyone. It's like, everything's working out. Like you have all the things you need
right
to get thing. And it's like, no, it's just one of those things, like no one's ever really satisfied or happy, like no matter where they are. They're just like, no, it's not enough that I can have hot women sleep with me and I'm rich. It's like, I have to ruin
I have
lives.
To open up an I have to open up an acting school.
The James Franco artist school.
I mean, Jesus, that one seems the most ridiculous though.
Yeah, that one's pretty ridiculous. The acting school raping. Yeah, how horny are these fucking guys? Yeah.
I don't even know if he was raping them, but he was like making them do weird things. Like, I don't know.
Well, from what I read, it's not like he was raping them.
Wow.
Because they were like, you're going to jail for raping these chicks. I was like, sounds like he raped someone. No, I mean, I just think about that because, you know, that 70s show was. I mean,
no, I'm talking about James Franco.
James Franco. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
James Franco, I don't think raped anyone. I think he just did some weird creepy things.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like, no. One girl said that, I don't know, like coerced.
Right.
Which is, you know, vague, you know, that kind of sounds like just like trying to convince someone to.
Right. But it was like stupid. Like, I think we joked about it once before, like, we're doing this scene where you blow me, you know? And and then she's like, where's the cameras? No, there's no cameras.
We're going to do a few weeks of rehearsal.
And we're going to do it in my van. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But
Danny Masterson definitely seemed to have, I mean, for them to really be able to get him, he definitely did it because those cases are hard to prove. I mean, you know, as your lawyer, but especially from so far long ago, you know, that's Bill Cosby territory right there.
I don't know how they did it because like it was from a long time ago and they did try him once before this and it was a hung jury, which means they couldn't agree on a verdict. And apparently more of them were leaning towards acquitting and on that jury. And there was something about this retrial that they weren't allowed to reference Scientology or something. Cause I think a lot of it was blaming Scientology or something. There was something with Scientology that wasn't allowed.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So, and I guess
he must be dying. Cause he was so close. He could have gotten off, you know, he could have gotten off.
Oh yeah. That's gotta be so fucking, that's gotta be so frustrating. Cause like he had to go through an entire trial. And that's kind of the best case scenario. Well, I mean, other than being acquitted, but like to have a hung jury, because usually they, you know, they, they're kind of like a little bit like worn out after the first trial. And, you know, a lot of times they don't want to like go through it again, the entire ordeal of another trial. So a lot of times they just they don't pursue it again. But this one, I guess they were just so adamant, like, no, we're fucking, I hate that 70s show so much. I hated Hyde so much. Do you think Ashton Kutcher and Mila Kunis are, you know, calling him a lot these days and, you know, hanging out, like supporting him?
I think that his number is blocked.
I would think
you don't want to get pulled into this. You know, you can't, this is just so bad. It's, you know, there were guys who defended Louis C.K. and, you know, comics who stood by his side.
Yeah.
But this is a whole different ball of wax. I'm sorry.
Some people kind of make careers of that, I noticed.
From C.K.?
Yeah, like kind of just, you know, jumping on after the thing to be kind of like the new best friend. I noticed that a little bit, which I guess is cool.
It's funny
to watch that because he did that whole joke about how like you find out who your real friends are.
Right.
And he's like, it's like they say that it's like a good thing. It's like, I don't know who my real fucking friends are. It's like, it's never the ones you want.
Right. Yeah, I'm just reading this article. They say Bijou Phillips, you know, who she's his wife. And she's...
Oh, of course she is.
Yeah, and she's, you know, China Phillips' sister, John, I guess John Phillips. He was a crazy person too, though. You know about him. He was in
Was he in the Mamas and the Papas?
Yeah, and he did some crazy... I think Mackenzie Phillips, who was also one of the daughters, said that after he died, that he raped her and
stuff. They had sex.
Yeah. Well, it's rape. I mean, when you have sex with your daughter, that's rape, pretty much.
Well, she did kind of, you know, couch it under the, you know, that it was consensual. Not that, but I mean, clearly it's wrong.
And right.
It's like, it probably is rape, but it was like, that's what almost made it creepier, was that it was almost like a consensual, like, sexual relationship with your... I mean, how fucked up do you have to be? I know, like, it's a crazy business, but... Mm-hmm. That's insane. And again, you're a fucking rock star.
Yeah.
Just goes there's you can't meet any women outside of your family.
It's a power. Oh, you're talking about John Phillips. Yeah. I mean,
well, no. I Mackenzie Phillips. Who was her dad? Was that John Phillips?
John Phillips. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. That's clearly he's crazy or he was crazy, but. Yeah, and Bijou Phillips, I like every time I would hear about her, she just seemed kind of like nutty. She always kind of had a reputation for being sort of nutty.
Oh, okay. Well, but this article the article says this does Bijou Phillips still believe husband Danny Masterson is not a rapist? I mean, of course she does. She doesn't think he is. I mean, if she did, she wouldn't be with him anymore. Now she's not going to be with him for 30
years. I mean, there's no way, like, you know, she's definitely going to cheat on him. She's going to be faithful to him. I mean, she's like, every time I see her, she's like dancing naked in a movie in the street.
Yeah. She's going to, she's going to rape a bunch of dudes, I think, to pay back.
Yeah. I don't think, he's going to be doing any raping in jail. Or maybe will it be a thing where they keep him away from the other people? You know, do you think that?
What do they call? Yeah, what do they call that?
Isolation, not isolation, but you know, whatever.
He's not in the general population.
Yeah, he's not in general pop.
I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but I think he probably won't do that 30 years. I don't, you know,
he won't.
Right, he'll be out in like 8 or 9. Not that that's fun.
Yeah, it'll only be 8 or 9 years of. I wonder, like, how it works, like, because I think that they probably. I mean. Do you think, like, who knows? Like, he'll probably find someone there who wants to be in showbiz and, like, make friends with them and, like, promise them a bunch of things. And then that guy will, like, protect him. That's the way to do it.
Well, if he doesn't know what rape is now, Danny Masterson, he's going to find out what it is soon enough.
It's going to be a little more clear. The lines won't be as blurred this time. Like, oh, that was definitely rape. I was not into that. And I kept yelling, stop it. Take the knife. All right.
What's the other story? There was another story.
Okay. So,
here we go.
I guess it came out today. So, you know, Jimmy Fallon and the Tonight Show, people are saying, you know, Rolling Stone wrote an article that says that apparently there's a very toxic work environment over there, which is very hard to believe, that apparently that Jimmy Fallon was sort of a creep to a lot of the employees.
Oh, yeah. And, I've heard that from people who work there. Yeah.
I have too. Yeah. I specifically heard it from a friend of ours who said that he didn't really say that Jimmy Fallon was a creep, but just more said that it was a toxic work environment and was very, very political and mm-hmm. not enjoyable or fun and kind of a miserable working experience, because you always felt like if you were kind of in or out, if you weren't in the inner circle, they were very like, they would treat you a certain way.
Yeah, and it's sad. And it's sad to hear these jobs, because those jobs, I know they're hard work, but they should be fun, shouldn't they? But you know what? They're not really, and that's why people kind of dip in and out of them. You hear about that with Saturday Night Live. They're just resume builders. You know, you do that for a couple of years. There were some big people who came through. Jimmy Fallon, the writing staff. That one girl, she works on every show, like Jen Staske. You know her?
I don't know her, but
I think she created that show Hacks, that the one on HBO.
Isn't she related to someone famous?
No, I think that's the girl who plays the main person on the show. She's Lorraine Newman's daughter. But
hot take: have you watched Hacks?
Yeah.
Do you like it?
It wasn't bad, actually. I didn't hate it.
Oh, okay.
What?
I had the opposite impression.
You hated it.
When it first came out, I watched a couple of episodes, I think, just because, I don't know, I was like, I heard it was good. It was before like all the hoopla and all the accolades. And I think I watched two episodes with my girlfriend, and we were just like, I just was like, I think this is bad. I just didn't think it was funny. It seemed, I mean, ironically, it seemed hacky to me. It just wasn't that.
It
didn't seem very original. Or
I mean, I don't love. I always feel like shows about stand-up comedy get it wrong so much. It was definitely more right than like Miss Maisel, which never rang. I mean, I guess it was supposed to be in the '50s, but people ask me, "Is that like stand-up comedy?" I'm like, "Oh, well, you do an open mic and then you get on a TV show the next day." No, I don't. That's
and
not
then
really.
Lenny Bruce says you're the best comedian of your generation.
I always remember this one episode of Mrs. Maisel early on, and she goes on a show. She's new and she completely bombs, and the booker or something is like, "All right, you had a tough set, but don't worry, I'll have you back tomorrow night. You'll get better." Like, that's not, if you're on a show for the first time and you're like a new comic, no one's gonna go, "Wow, we'll give you another shot." Maybe in the '50s, maybe there was four comics, so maybe that happened.
My experience was I would do a show and I would kill, and they'd be like, they would never contact me again.
Maybe you're doing the wrong thing. You should have been bombing.
I had that so many times in my career where like I would kill in a room and just no one would there could be like the biggest booker of something in the world there, and I would kill and they'd be like, "Great job." And then it would lead nowhere. Like, that happened. So it became a thing where I would kill and nothing would happen, or I would do badly and nothing would happen. So I didn't really have the experience of like bombing, and they were like, "Oh, great job. Just come back."
Right. But I've seen comics like bomb their way to the top, which I'm always shocked about. They're like, "Oh my God." And they blow up, and you're like, I've never seen this comic do well once. I mean, just even accidentally. So I don't know how some people just
like, you told me about that about like Bill Burr, right?
What? No, shut up.
He bombed his way to the top. I've never seen this guy do well once.
Yeah. But there are a few that I've seen, and then you find out they blow up. I'm like, I have to see them enough, but I always give comics like three chances, because everyone can have a bad set. Yeah. But
no, definitely.
But after three, you know, you got to do well at least one out of three, you know. But I've seen comics 10, 12, I'm like, never, and they're doing well. I'm like, where are you doing well? Because I would like to see that show.
I do remember when I was starting out, there was a lot of you know, dick measuring going on between comedians, especially when you're new and young. Comedians would always just want to tell you about shows they did and how they killed. And like, I did notice that there were certain people that like every time they told me about a show, they killed every single time they were telling me about a show. "Oh, I did a show. I killed." They were just telling me about it. They killed all the time. And they were just, every time I saw them, they bombed. And I was just like, I don't understand. But so you're killing every time I'm not around. But like, so what is, but then I just realized like, oh, they're just the people who tell you how great they are. I mean, I guess this isn't just in comedy. It's
right. Whatever. Look at Trump.
It goes up to the president.
Yeah.
They're usually the worst. People. And that's why it's funny about this Jimmy Fallon thing. So basically like they were saying, first of all, I've heard this for years and they were referencing it again, that apparently he's had like a bad alcohol problem. And I think
yes, I've seen that. This,
yeah, I've heard that. And also
I've seen it personally.
Did you see
well,
it at
that bar? That goes hand in. Yeah. You know, and he would come into this place a lot and, you know, he was always wasted. The bar was a little bit off the beaten path. So it was kind of, and he knew some people there. So I think he would like to go there because he didn't, you know, and they would say when you go in there, don't take his picture, don't do anything. And we would do that because I'm like, oh, I'd rather have a drunk Jimmy Fallon here than have someone take his picture. And
yeah, I would just, when I saw him there, I just sketch him to make him feel more comfortable. But yeah, go ahead.
But then someone told me that who had worked there that he was getting so much trouble for catting around the city and he was falling down that he found like private places to go to and he would and just with the writers and he would go, you guys just hang out with me here at this private place and we'll hang out just private, you know? And honestly, if you were one of those comics, or I think he probably asked all the writers, if you weren't one of those writers, if you did say like, I want to go home, that was probably a bad move on your part, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would imagine so too. If your boss is an egotistical, narcissistic, alcoholic, drug addict, like, I don't think he's going to take it well when you're just like, I don't want to hang out with you. I think he's going to take that very personally. It doesn't sound like, but apparently, yeah, he would. First of all, that sucks. It's like, isn't that the whole point of becoming that? I feel like back in the day when you were like the host of the Tonight Show, it was just kind of like, that was your lifestyle. It was just expected, like you were drunk all the time and smoking, and, you know, and just banging a bunch of chicks. And like that was just your life. Now I feel like, what's the whole point of getting there if you can't even, clearly he likes to party. So like you get there and then you can't have any fun anymore. Like that sounds like a nightmare to me.
Yeah, right? It does. But I think that he was the number one late night show for a while. Now he's like number three. So you get less, you know, less leeway when you're not number one. And I think that even might have contributed to the drinking more,
right?
Because you see it slip away.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sure.
I mean, that one was probably this was a Tonight Show where it was Johnny Carson was number one. Jay Leno, after a rough start, became number one. Conan was on for a little bit and he got fired after 9 months because he wasn't number one. And then Fallon was number one. So basically it was really, or Jack Parr years ago. So you're taking the New York Yankees and you're turning them into the Oakland A's. So you're
the only thing is it did, everything shifted. So it's not really the same game anymore or sport, but yeah, you're right.
But the big thing was when Trump became president, that was Jimmy Fallon was still being too silly and he was playing games and everyone wanted to see these guys' takes on politics. It just seemed like it
that's
worked.
That's why Colbert took over.
Right.
Good, because he was more interesting. And I mean, I never really first of all, it doesn't surprise me that Jimmy Fallon would be a nightmare behind the scenes, because I feel like it's always those guys that like their public persona, they're always like really likable and like trying really hard to be liked by people. Those are always like the monsters behind the scenes. And then it's like the people who are the worst people in the world.
Right. I think we might have discussed this too. If your persona is the same as like Letterman was a kind of a douche in front of the camera.
Right.
And he was apparently really rough off camera. But no one got mad about that because they're like, well, that was his personality on camera. He wasn't playing Mr. Nice Guy. He was playing snarky asshole.
Yeah.
So I always heard that the character Krusty the Clown was based on Letterman. That he would
really,
you know, yeah, because there was a lot of Letterman writers who had come over to The Simpsons, or at least a couple. And, you know, he was like, hey, you know, in front of the camera, just whatever. And then off camera, he was just a miserable fuck. And that's what I always heard about Letterman. Don't know if it's true, but
yeah.
But even Letterman wasn't that much of a nice guy on camera. Someone was like, yeah, I could see him being a prick. He's kind of a prick to half the guests anyway.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. But yeah, it seems like maybe it's if you're trying too hard to be likable, and it's usually like it's like the nicer you are in your public persona is, the worse person you probably are off stage. So Letterman, it was kind of like maybe less of a disparity between the two, because he was kind of a surly prick on camera. So he probably still a little bit worse off camera, but maybe not as drastically bad as someone like, I just think, I feel like
Ellen DeGeneres, just, like, we, you know, she was like, that's why people were crashing on her. Cause I'm like, she's dancing, being so nice. Then you hear stories, you know, off camera, like people can't look at her or talk to her, and you know, yeah, that kind of thing.
She would tap dance on your face if you looked at her. She'd be like, if you looked at her, she'd be like, oh, now we're going to dance.
So did you read the article? Because I can't really get to all
I read it. Yeah, it just basically goes, it quotes a lot of, you know, anonymous people who, I think they said a couple people who still work there, and then like a bunch of people who used to work there. And they were just saying a lot of them were like, they dubbed the dressing rooms the crying rooms.
Oh, no.
Like, because they would always go in, people would go in there and cry because, you know, he would like humiliate them and embarrass them. And it just, you know, basically he was drunk a lot, and the culture was just kind of what you hear, you just always hear, like, that these are like the most toxic environments in the world. Right. And
But again,
it's like, what's the point of even going into showbiz anymore? It's just like, everything's a nightmare. It's like, everyone's mean to you. They yell at you.
Right.
And like, now they don't pay you. You know what I mean? And then they can fire you. It's like, what are the bonuses?
But, you know, in fairness, it also shows how more sensitive, and maybe for a good reason, how more sensitive people are now. Because, you know, I heard stories about like Sid Caesar. He had a big show in the 50s, and he would just fucking, they had to do like a shit ton of shows too. So he was taking drugs and drunk and, you know, yelling at the writers that your joke sucked. And they still talk about him like they loved him. Cause, you know, back then, I guess people just were tougher. And they're like, yeah, your boss fucking yells at you. That's what happens.
You know? Did you, you know, obviously this writer's strike, there's a lot of people with a lot of free time on their hands. And I guess this Fallon shit has like, kind of come to the surface a few times. I feel like that this is like, there's little fires that kind of erupt around him every now and then, and then they just sort of put them out and they go away.
I think he's lucky that he's not on, he's off now, because he doesn't have to address this, and this is going to be out of the news cycle in a week. So I mean, I think this works out perfectly for him. They might try to bring it up again, but you know how these things kind of cycle in and out. Like, no one's even talking about Ellen DeGeneres anymore. I don't think she's on anymore.
The other thing too is like, I just feel like there's not a lot of sympathy again. Like, it's just like, people look at those jobs and they're just like, well, all right, so you're working at the Tonight Show, you know? Like, I want, you know, because most people are like, I hate my job. You know, everyone's mean to me in my job. Like, you're working at the Tonight Show. And like, the thing is, I understand no sympathy, but it really is a nightmare. And like, if you get a job like that, if you're lucky to finally break through and get a job like that, and they just make you so miserable, and they're basically like almost like harassing you while you're working. And, you know, you're always on. That's one thing I always heard about those jobs. Like, especially if you're new, you're just always on the chopping block. It's always like, we'll review your contract in 6 weeks. Like, they give you like no time to stay there, and you can make good money, but if it's not for that long, it's just sort of pointless, you know?
Plus,
so
yeah. And plus, not only that, they can know they can be meaner because it's a job everyone wants.
Right.
You know, if you work at McDonald's and your boss is a raging psycho, you'll be like, I think I'm just going to get another job. places like this, they think they have, you know, they feel like they can just yell at you. However, I feel that really, if you're, you know, scared and frustrated all day, you can't really be that funny.
Yeah.
If you feel pressure to write the perfect joke every time, you're going to write a bad joke, in my opinion.
Yeah. So based on that theory, then the writers there must have been terrified every fucking second. Have you watched it? I mean, you know, I'm just like, I watched that show a little bit. It wasn't like the funniest show I'd ever seen. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, working there must just be like a genius factory.
I think what they were doing, because since they started losing the ratings race, they started trying to win the YouTube race or the TikTok race, whatever. So them especially would hunt for viral clips, which I guess generates money, you know, not as much as probably advertising on TV, but you have the clip on YouTube, you're going to generate revenue. And you would see that they were really the first out of all those shows to really start hunting for viral moments. And then I think the rest of them kind of followed Kimmel and Colbert, where they would just have these bits that you were like, I know what you're trying to do. You're just trying to get a million views on this. So you'd do something ridiculous. And
yeah. Yeah. That's
usually with a celebrity that always would make things go viral. So you play a game where you're like playing Hungry Hungry Hippos with, you know, Glenn Close, right. that kind of thing. That was a random.
I know, but scarily enough, I don't think you were very off. I mean, I literally feel like it was like Sir Ian McKellen and him playing Twister. Like that was like Judi Dench and him.
And you always talk about this too, because it's like now most celebrities would never back in the day would never do stuff like that. They would feel like it devalues them a little bit.
Right.
But now they say, oh, no, but it doesn't hurt you. It's like being in a commercial. Remember years ago, everyone was always in commercials in Japan. Right. If you were famous, now they don't care. But I do think it takes away from something if you're a Shakespearean actor and you're playing Chutes and Ladders with Jimmy Fallon. I feel like that might cost you an Oscar nomination somewhere down the
line. I don't think it would anymore. I don't think the Oscars even have that much of a cachet anymore. Right. I feel like
that'll be a movie nominated, just Glenn Close playing Hungry Hungry Hippos.
Yeah, I mean, I remember back in the 90s, I read some article like Charlie Sheen like did a commercial in Japan. Like Charlie Sheen wouldn't like stoop low enough to do commercials in the US.
Right.
Have you seen Charlie Sheen lately? He's selling his kidneys on the street now. He wouldn't do commercials in the US because it was beneath him.
Right.
It's insane. I mean,
I know there was a lot of Woody Allen would do a lot of that too. And that I could see that with him because he was like this auteur, you know, and he didn't want to debase himself, but his movies never really made a lot of money. They were all low budget movies. So he probably had to finance that somewhere. I don't think anyone wants him to do commercials now.
Well, you know, he has a new movie coming out.
I heard
just premiered at like some film festival. And apparently it's great. Did you hear about that? Like,
no.
People are saying it's great. First of all, these foreign film festivals, they always like make a big deal. They're like, it got a 20-minute standing ovation.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? I've never, even the greatest thing in the world I've ever seen, I've never given a standing ovation for more than 1 minute.
Do you think that they just make that up? Or maybe there's like people in the audience who are there planted and they just do that so they can... I'm not even joking. Maybe they either make up that story or they put a bunch of people who work for the studio and they just have them stand
professional
up.
Professional standing ovators.
Right.
They didn't say the whole crowd did.
They just said people were, right?
Yeah. And it's always like 20 minutes. It's just like, what are you talking about? That doesn't make any... Is it just like... I guess it's expected at some of these places. Like it's kind of a... it's part of the ritual a little bit. Like, if we like it, we'll do it. But it's just weird how it varies. The times vary. Like, they'll be like, oh, it only got a 5-minute standing ovation. This one got a, 5-hour standing ovation. You're just like, okay.
Expendables 4 got a 20-minute ovation? Yeah. I don't think so.
It seems like, but apparently this movie's really good and like, I was reading stuff about it and my immediate reaction was, I'll see it. Like, you know, I mean, I think he probably did it and everything, but it's like,
but you're not going to be able to see it in the theater. I don't think, I don't think they put his movies in American theaters anymore.
I'll just watch it when it comes out. But, right.
You might have to wait a whole, week and a half for that movie to come out.
I know it's rough, but, it's funny cause, that was always a big argument where people would be like, because I think we've talked about this, like, you know, these people that get in trouble and their legacy is tainted by something they did. And people are like, can you still, you know, like Michael Jackson? Like, I think he totally did it. But when I hear a song by his, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is a good song.
Oh, yeah, I could separate it.
Like, I'm not like, and my people, like, how can you listen to that? And my thing was like, you know, he's not molesting the kids in the song. like if the song were sounds of him molesting kids, I'd be like, yeah, I don't think I can listen to this anymore. This is rough.
Yeah.
Now that I know he did it, because I thought it was make-believe, but like the same thing with Woody Allen, like he's not doing the thing in the movie.
And if you really want to play that game and take it to the next level, I mean, separating the artists from their art. I mean, a lot of people, even if they're famous, even if they didn't rape people, they could just be assholes. Like you've met them in real life and they're an asshole. You'd still be like, all right, this guy's a fucking asshole, but I still like his movies. Have you ever,
I still like Glenn Close.
Glenn Close.
She's getting a lot of shout outs today. She is a great go-to celebrity.
Yeah. Never won an Oscar, by the way, which is very shocking in my opinion.
That's where she got her nickname. Glenn Close, but no cigar.
You know the one she should have gotten it for, though, right?
What is it for? Fatal Attraction?
Yeah.
Was she nominated for that?
Yeah, I think people thought she was gonna definitely win, and Cher won that year for that. Moonstruck.
Oh, Moonstruck.
Which is, that movie's, I mean, come on, man. And that was, because that was movie was like defining for a generation of movies of like the psycho ex-girlfriend or the psycho ex-boyfriend kind of thing. They made like so many movies after that.
They're still making them. I feel like I just saw one. I saw like a reverse black version of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
Glenn Close was in it.
Yeah, yeah.
She was in blackface.
She was in blackface with Jimmy Fallon. That was the other thing. They tried to get him with black, you know, because black. It's funny how like all these guys have like blackface videos just lying, you know, on the internet.
Right.
And they just come out, you know, like years later. And then they're always like, oh, I'm so sorry. And, you know, I didn't know how insensitive that was. And it's like, really? It was like 2005.
I know.
You hadn't heard about that yet?
It was a different time.
Wait, can you hear? Is your mic? I think
I'm sorry. I said it was a different time.
I'm sorry. Did you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. It was a different time. It was 6 months ago. Well, I think the crazy thing with the blackface is that how many people have those pictures? I mean, even the Prime Minister of Canada has one, which to me is...
I know. I can't believe like how often people are just in scenarios where there's just like someone has black makeup and they're just like, yeah, put this on me. Like, that's got to take a while, right? I feel like if someone's putting black paint on my face, I in about 3 minutes, I'd be like, you know what? I don't want to do this.
Well, always the funnier thing is, though, is when they find some politician who's anti-drag or anti-trans, and then they have a picture of them inevitably dressed up as a woman.
And, right.
I mean, and I know that can be more common, and back in the day it was looked as comical, but I don't have any pictures of myself dressed up as a woman. Do you?
I have a few of you dressed up as a woman. I had a really, you know, a few bad years of drinking. So I have some black dick pics out there. My dick in blackface. In black dick. That's going to happen. Like when that scandal breaks, that'll be hilarious. Like apparently a dick pic has came out. Oh man, that's how. Nope, there's more. It's a very racially insensitive dick pic. I feel like that could come out with Trump and it just wouldn't do anything. His poll numbers would go up.
No.
It's funny. They're like, Trump murdered everyone's grandmother today. His poll numbers immediately went up. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not even with that. I mean, still looking at those polls, I'm like, where? This is close with him and Biden? I don't understand. Close.
I think he's winning. So Danny Masterson, apparently his lawyer suggested he should run for president.
Yeah.
Get him out of. But, this is what I was going to ask you. So, you know, all these stories about these, you know, people, you know, behind the scenes are a nightmare. You know, in our times in showbiz or entertainment, you've come across a lot of famous people. Has there been a time where you've met someone specifically that was just like a horror story? Just kind of like they were just like a total monster?
No, but, you know, just sometimes they're just kind of assholes or at least aloof. If they're aloof, I understand. I mean, who, they don't know me. I mean, you don't have to be super friendly to everybody. But yeah, I can't really think of anyone famous. Oh, what, you have a story?
Screech.
Yeah, I know. Screech.
You know, this wasn't like a real big celebrity one, but like I knew who he was, and it was weird because he was like, I was in LA and some girl I knew was shooting a short film, and you know, I was like, I was doing something on it, and at one point she was parked right outside, but like she had this van with all the equipment in it, and she was like, oh man, can you just go out there and like stand next to the van, because I don't want to get a ticket, so if they come, can you move the car? And I was like, yeah, all right. And I was standing there, and do you know that guy Mario Joyner, that comedian?
Oh yeah, yeah, he was friends with Seinfeld, I think.
Yeah. So, and this was like 2000 2001, I knew who he was, and he walked up and he just started screaming at me because I think the car was like blocking him or something, the van, and he just started like screaming at me. He's like, what the hell is it, get this shit out of here? And I was like, oh, it's not my van, I'm waiting. He was like, this is bullshit. I guess he lived there. And I remember it was so weird because I was like, oh, that's Mario Joyner. And he's like really mad at me, screaming at me.
And it wasn't even your car. I mean, I don't think some people's first move is to yell. You have to survey the situation before you yell because you don't know who you're yelling at. And in that situation, you're just standing by the car.
Yeah. Yeah. I might have been in it.
But oh, okay.
I don't know. And he just wouldn't let it go. And then I think I got the woman and she was like, I think he lived there or something, and she like might have known him as a neighbor. She was like, "Oh, I hate him. He's such a prick." And so my big one is Mario Joyner is apparently a nightmare. But it was just a funny experience because it was like I've had experiences where I'll meet a celebrity and like it's weird because if they're looking at me and you're just like, "Wow, I can't believe I'm like interacting with him." It's another one if like you know someone and they're like just immediately mad at you.
Yeah.
I had that with Janine Garofalo too, where she got really mad at me. It was just like, she wasn't yelling at me, but she was really mad at me.
For what?
I feel like I've talked about it. I did a documentary or mockumentary years ago, and I interviewed for her for it, or I asked her to do an interview, and I've met her like 50 times, and she never remembers me, which is fine.
Right.
Especially after this experience. And I had asked her, you know, over text to like do this interview. And then I said what it was about vaguely, because it was over text. I couldn't really send along.
Right.
And then I was asking her about something and she got really defensive and mad. She was like, you didn't say you were going to ask me about that. Like, you know, why didn't you tell me that? And I was like, well, I kind of told you like the general idea of it. And she was like, oh, I can't believe you did that. Like, you know, you like tricked me to get me here.
What'd you ask her what her name was?
No, I was going to ask her about Dave Chappelle. This was like before Chappelle came back. You know, right. I remember when he like was gone and no one knew what he was doing after the Chappelle show.
Yes.
And I was kind of like going to ask her about, you know, what her thoughts on, you know, because people forget because he came back, you know, so people kind of forget that he was gone for like 15 years.
Yeah. And I think maybe she didn't want to like, because people had some weird opinions about it too, you know.
Well, it was
all
weird.
She had to do is say she had no opinion on it.
Well, she was like, "Well, I mean, does he know you're going to talk about that?" I'm like, "No." She's like, "Well, I mean, what do you?" And I'm like, "I don't know him, but also right. like, I think I'm allowed to talk about him. You know, I don't think that's illegal, but I guess you know she knew him in some capacity,
right?"
And I understood it, but I was like, "Well, I just won't ask you about it." But then she just wouldn't let it go, so. And, you know, if you know anything about her, you know, her persona, she seems like someone that isn't the most chill person in the world.
Right. I could. Yes.
So it was weird because, I mean, I remember when, you know, years before I did stand up, she was really famous at one point when, you know, we're Gen X. So she was kind of like a Gen X icon. And it was just weird. Then I interviewed her for like an hour and a half and she just, and the whole time I was just like terrified. I was just so terrified. And,
well, she probably thinks she was kind of doing a favor to you and she doesn't want to fuck up her career, I guess.
I don't think it was the fuck up her career, because then what happened was I started interviewing her about her career and she wouldn't stop talking. Like, literally, I could not shut her up. She was like, because I wanted it to end as soon as possible. And I just kept being like, okay, well, I think that's enough. And then she'd be like, and also did it. And she just, and then the interview ended and I wanted to leave so bad. She like wouldn't leave. She started, I think at the end, she liked me, you know, she was cool at the end, but it was like traumatized. I mean, it was just, it was, like I said, it's weird when you meet someone that has been, that you've been a big fan of, is an icon to you, and then they're mad at you and they like don't like you, and you're like, oh, okay.
But on the other end of it, in the end, people love talking about themselves. So once you started doing a deep dive or whatever into her career, it's like when we have guests on the podcast, sometimes I tell them, it'll be just like 20 minutes. And I know it'll always be more because people...
They'll be like, hey, tell me what I have to go, all right? And then I'd cut to 4 hours later. And then so then when I was in third grade...
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Listen, people, I mean, if someone says, tell me about your life, most people will... You know, they won't, there's no time limit on that. You could tell them 20 minutes, but they're going to be there for a while.
It actually ended up being a really good interview. And I kind of changed the whole idea. That was the first interview I did. And I kind of framed almost the entire thing around her interview.
Oh, that's cool.
I got interviews with other people but it gave me the idea because it was a mockumentary about me as a comic. And showing the trajectory of like my career or whatever at the time, what I was trying to present as my career. And like, she talked about all like, you know, the fallow periods in her career and how like she was so big and she, you know, didn't really expect it and didn't know how to handle it and didn't feel comfortable. And then when it went away, she felt more comfortable. And so it was really interesting. But like I said, it was just, it was just weird. So I don't know how I got, but yeah. And there's definitely been more. I met Vince Vaughn a couple times and he was really nice one time. And then another time he was really shitty. And then I was like, I did not like, and then he became not really that funny after that. And I was like,
I met Harvey Weinstein. I met Harvey Weinstein once. He was kind of a psycho. I was very shocked.
Really? It's weird. He seems like he'd be cool. Very down. I heard he's really down to earth.
Well, you know, that Tom Cruise movie, The Tropic Thunder, you know, he's playing him. And this was even before everyone knew he was raping everybody. They played him as an asshole. He would yell at people all the time. You watch these documentaries about Harvey Weinstein. This is even outside of the rape, that he would just scream at people and bully people. So, which is probably, you know, that's when the chickens come home to roost, because once people find out stuff about you and you've been a dick to them their whole life, they will serve you up on a fucking platter. Right.
Especially that industry. Because that whole industry is about like slighting people. It's like, I think Mickey Rourke said it's a town built on spite. And it's just, it's so true. It's just full of people who have been like passed over or marginalized or oppressed. And then like, you know, it's funny. No one ever learns the lesson. People, and especially in showbiz, it's like there's this thing where like if someone has success in that industry, they always think that they're the ones that it's just never going to. It's just a train of like success now from here to the end.
It's going
to
go on forever.
It never works that way. So inevitably when it goes bad, and I've even experienced it, like knowing people who did have that, and then like it kind of went away, and then they were like a lot nicer to me.
Right. And it's so funny.
Go ahead.
No, I was just reading because I like the show on HBO Max called Winning Time. It's about the Lakers in the 80s, and John C. Reilly, isn't it? And I saw some interview with him, and he's like, he was not even canceled. There was no canceling. It's just sometimes you're just career stops. And I guess he's not classically good looking or anything like that. He's a character actor, and he was like, he's like, if I didn't get this Winning Time, he's like, my career, he's like, I had nothing. I had nothing in the going forward. He goes, he's like, I was in 80 movies. And all of a sudden the phone just stopped ringing for no reason. And he got, you know, the story about that, right? Where
was it supposed to be Will Ferrell?
Right. But actually was the original choice was Michael Shannon. This is all out there. Michael Shannon was going to be the character.
Wow.
And Michael Shannon didn't like it that he had to keep... The characters on that show keep breaking the fourth wall. They keep talking to the screen. And Michael Shannon said to Adam McKay, he's like, I just don't feel comfortable with this. I don't want to do this. But Michael Shannon's in that point of his career. He could just walk away from something like that.
He would have been good. But John C. Reilly seems really perfect.
He's
for
great.
It.
And then
and that show, I was into it first season. I was like, but I like love it now. I think it's so really good.
And you don't even have to know basketball. Better. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing with the Will Ferrell thing is that Will Ferrell wanted the role and then he just, you know, gave it. And I think that was, you know, you go for the actor there and Will Ferrell's great. But I mean, John C. Reilly is a great actor, and he kind of he does look like the guy. They also said he doesn't. He looks like the guy a lot. He does. Jerry Buss. He looks like him. So that helps a lot.
Yeah, he does. Will Ferrell, though, I don't think it would have worked because Will Ferrell, I always associate Will Ferrell with funny. Like, I can't. And it's not a funny part. Like, it's not like really a comedy part. So, like, John Reilly was a, you know, like just kind of a straight ahead actor for years. And then he kind of like peripherally got into comedy because he was funny and he kind of got in that whole Apatow, whatever, Will Ferrell crew. And even
when John C. Reilly is doing a serious role, he has a little humor to it, like his character in Boogie Nights, where it's serious crap. But it's he always has this little comedy, like the Jerry Buss that he plays on that show is mostly a straight character, but he's always kind of funny. He knows the tone. He's just a really good actor.
I feel like that show has like sneakily worked its way into the pop culture. Like, it was a show that was around and people were kind of aware of it. But now it's all of a sudden like, wait a minute, this is like a really good show. Like, why isn't anyone? And
the guy, I mean, they all look like the guy does look like Magic Johnson. The guy who plays Larry Bird looks and fucking sounds exactly like, I don't know where the fuck they found that guy. That is crazy. You see the guy.
I think the Magic Johnson guy. Yeah, the Bird guy does, but Magic Johnson, he has his essence. Like,
He does a really good job with it.
And the charisma.
The Kareem guy is pretty good. The guy who plays Kareem.
The Kareem guy is really good. It's cast. And actually, like Adrian Brody, I didn't think at first. I was like, he's going to be Pat Riley. But more this season with what's happening, like, mm-hmm. Adrian Brody, he's doing such a good job of relaying the trajectory and kind of like evolution of Pat Riley. Like, because it just kind of gotten to the point where he's coming into his own, getting his confidence to become what he becomes later. And I realized I'm like, oh, Adrian Brody's such a good actor. You needed someone like that to fully embody how Pat Riley went from one thing to the other.
Right.
And I feel like it's another thing, like Adrian Brody, it's like, you know, people are always like, oh, he didn't live up to what he should have been after the Oscar. But I feel like this oddly is like his best thing since that.
No, he's got to come back. He's a character actor, and that's, he is a good career. Then that's, maybe he's not the leading man anymore, but you know, the guy who I'm always really impressed with is the one who plays Jerry West, that guy, Jason Clarke. He is Australian. He's another Australian who can do any fucking accent. He was in Zero Dark 30. He looks like Jerry West too.
He is good.
Jerry West is apparently not happy with the portrayal because it makes him seem like an angry psycho. You know, like he was always very hot. That's why Jerry West, when they asked him to coach the team after that guy got fired, he didn't want to do it because he was so stressed out. He takes everything so personally. So he ended up being the general manager of the team. So that's why he didn't want to do it. And apparently Jerry West, who's still alive, doesn't like the portrayal. But people say, yeah, no, he was like that. He's very good at his job. He's like one of the best GMs ever. But he can't.
I feel like the more angry people get at their depiction of themselves, the more accurate it is.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if it wasn't and you just were kind of like, you'd be like, well, it's not really me. But if you're just so adamantly like, that's not at all. And the other thing is like, I think that they really, they get like stuck on odd details. Like, I think that they look at things like, you know, I wasn't wearing that suit. Like, I would never wear a suit like that.
Right.
There's a lot of like creative, you know, license that they're taking. It's just, it's not supposed to be exactly what happened.
Right.
But no. I'm sure he was a prick, that guy. And he doesn't even come off that bad on the show.
No, he just seems like an intense, what Jerry West was, is a very intense, we have to win. But he was so intense, he couldn't coach because that's that extra stress. I mean, Pat Riley, if we want to talk basketball for a minute, he ended up coaching the Knicks after that. And then he coached the Miami Heat. And then he was an intense person too. And he's like, he became the GM of the Miami Heat. He's like, I can't coach anymore. It takes too much out of you. Every second of your day, you're just consumed with this. And especially basketball, because it moves so fast.
This is the last thing I wanted to before we end. All right. So did you see this thing? It kind of came and went. I guess Bradley Cooper's in some movie playing someone.
Yeah. Bernstein with the fake nose.
Yeah. Bernstein. He has a fake nose. And so he was getting a lot of flack for like calling it like Jew face. Did you hear about that?
Mm-hmm.
because he was wearing a prosthetic nose. And so it's just sort of like, okay, but you know, if that's what the guy looked like, and like, isn't that what being, I feel like that's what acting just kind of used to be. And we just accepted it. It was like, oh, I'm playing this guy, so I'm going to do this to look more like the guy. And it's like, yeah, oh, but Jufy's like, but that's what the guy looked like.
Right. But my thing is like, I'm not offended by it. Bradley Cooper doesn't have, he has kind of a bigger nose anyway. So I think he could have gotten away with it. But yeah, that's not my issue. My issue is that it's like, you don't, no one even remembers what this guy looks like. So who cares?
Yeah, you're right.
Like Cillian Murphy, he plays Oppenheimer. He didn't look like Oppenheimer. Close.
You're right.
But so no one remembers what Oppenheimer looked like. Oppenheimer had kind of a big nose and this guy didn't. So I'm not offended by it. I just feel like it's, if it's like a character
it's pointless.
Well, if you're going to play Trump, you should look like Trump because everyone knows what Trump looks like. But if you're playing Napoleon, you could be black and do it. People probably wouldn't know the difference.
No, you're right. I didn't think of it that way. The other thing I thought of that's funny is like, I don't know, he played the Elephant Man on Broadway.
Who did?
Bradley Cooper.
Oh, really?
And the big thing about it that everyone was like, kind of like, you know, praising and getting, he was getting a lot of accolades, is that he didn't wear any makeup or prosthetics. He just kind of like contorted his body. And I always thought, you know, it's like, God, it's so amazing. It's like, I do think it's funny that like that a really good looking actor would be like, you know, I'm going to be the Elephant Man, but guess what? I'm not going to wear any of the ugly stuff. It's just going to be me, still really good looking, but I'm going to kind of like arch my neck a little bit. So it's like an Elephant Man. It's like, so you're just going to be really good looking as the Elephant Man. It's like, what's this role? A Jew? Here, give me a huge nose. I didn't wear any. Well, you didn't wear a nose with the Elephant Man. No, well, I didn't. He didn't need it.
Well, it was like the Twilight Zone episode where everyone's ugly and she's hot, but you don't know that till the end of the episode. They go, they're going to give her plastic surgery, and you see no one's faces.
No, I don't think the play Elephant Man was a reveal at the end. I don't think there was a twist. I think it was just kind of, he was supposed to be like, that's how great an actor I am. I just, you know, I don't even need to wear. I just think it's funny that for the Elephant Man, he didn't need the big nose, but for the Jewish guy, he just needs the honker.
Yeah.
Also, I think it's funny that there's something else I was going to say about it. Oh, I was saying like, it must be kind of a slap in the face, because imagine like they pick an actor to play you. And it's like a really good looking actor, but then you find out that they're putting on all this like ugly makeup to make you look shit. Like, wait, who did they get? Who did they get? Brad Pitt? All right. Like, yeah, no, he's wearing another fake neck. They shaved his hair off. They put hair all over his back.
I think it's even worse though if you're hired as an actor and they tell you to play an ugly role and they don't want you to put anything on. Like, yeah. I think apparently that happened with Steve Buscemi with Fargo. And he was reading the script and he goes, I saw him in an interview. He went to Joel Cohn and said, he goes, you know, this guy, seems like he's really weird and ugly looking. He goes, so should I put any, you know, prosthetics on? They're like, no, you'll be good.
We're not ever going to put any makeup on you.
Yeah. I think he was offended because he was always a weird looking dude, you know?
Yeah. I also think I remember seeing sometimes they would always do biopics. I remember seeing a biopic. I think it was for Def Leppard. Mm-hmm. And I remember specifically watching, and there was one guy, you know, I didn't really know what they looked at, but like there was one dude in the band and he was so ugly, the actor guy. And I remember being like, what did this guy do to the fucking casting guy or to the director? Just it was like striking how ugly the guy. And I was like, that must be touchy because, like, you know, someone makes a biopic of you and then you see the actor and it's kind of a bad way to discover you're like not good looking.
Right.
I mean, it would kind of scare me to know who they would like cast as me.
Well, it was like that thing with Moneyball where the guy, Billy Bean, was being played by Brad Pitt, and Billy Bean was the general Matt, and he was a good looking guy. And then the other guy was played by Jonah Hill. Yeah. And the guy was even talking about it. He's like, wait, they got Brad Pitt to play that guy and I get Jonah Hill.
Yeah. Oh, so who's playing us? Oh, they got Tom Cruise. And what about me? For you, it's Harvey Keitel's last shit. Okay. Yeah, no, it was a close race. All right. This is a random question I've been asking people, and if you don't have an answer.
All right, and we gotta wrap up after this, but go ahead.
Okay. I'm gonna ask it, but I mean you don't have to really it'll be a quick thing. So I was just watching Pulp Fiction. You like that movie, right?
I just saw it again recently too, yeah.
So I haven't seen it in a while, and I know it's like I just feel like there's a lot of things about it that I, you know, forgot that like, and there are such like amazing aspects to it. Mm-hmm. So the thing, all right, the scene at the beginning when they go to see the guys, the young guys to get
yes.
the suitcase.
Right.
They don't tell you anything of that background. They right. don't tell you what, how Marcellus and those kids are, because they're like college kids, how they're interacting with it, how they're connected. Right. And they don't ever show you what's in the suitcase. So if you had to put something down of what the connection between those kids and Marcellus is and what's in the suitcase, what would you say?
I mean, I think when I first saw it, it was something like they stole drugs from him and that was in the suitcase. When I first saw it, I know there's probably more symbolism to the whole thing, yeah. but that's what I thought when I saw it.
I think it's like, a good like kind of Rorschach or like litmus test.
Right.
Like, because I do think part of it is, I don't think there is a specific answer. I don't. Sure. I think he went into. I think he had his own thing, but I do think it's kind of seeing such a good movie now in kind of the current climate of movies, it stands out even more how good it is because you're yeah. like, oh, that's like the idea that something that huge in a movie would happen, such a huge plot point, and he doesn't ever tell you what's going on is just mind blowing to me. So. Yeah. So is that what you?
Yeah.
Well, it's glowing gold, though. So
well, there's always rumors that was his soul, or something like that.
Yeah.
You ever hear that rumor?
I've heard that one, and then they show Marcellus right after he has a Band-Aid on the back of his neck, and it's supposed to be that is how they got his soul out of him.
Oh, I didn't know that part. That's pretty good.
That it's Marcellus's soul, but the main thing I think is weird. Not even the suitcase. It's more the college kids because it's so right. weird. But anyway, I don't know. That's I've been asking a lot of people that question. And
well,
I've been looking up on
it. It just was later in the movie where Tim Roth looks, or is it Tim Roth? He looks in the briefcase when he's trying to rob those guys, and he goes, yeah. "Is that what
is
I
that
think,
what
it,
I think
is?
It is?"
Yeah. So would he recognize Marcellus's soul in a briefcase? That seems a little bit odd.
Right, but would he recognize like where are you getting your drugs that they're just glowing gold? Please hook me up with your dealer.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, we'll wrap it up.
I'm glad we covered all the important topics.
Yeah.
Think about it. Listeners, think about it and message me what you think it is.
Yeah, and listen to this Instagram. In prison. Listen to this in prison, Danny Masters, and you'll have some free time.
I heard they're putting him in Sylvania prison, so it should be perfect for him. All right, thanks a lot, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. That was a fun one, and we'll see you next time. All right, bye-bye.
All right.